Hello everybody out there in the world. Hi, I am Vern. Welcome to Cinema Recall Podcast. This is a short little bonus recap episode of some of the wonderful movies that I am seeing at the Minneapolis St. Paul International Film Festival. Here is the booklet right here. Very cool. I'm just going to give you my small recaps and reviews of these features. Many of these movies have not found distribution, or at least not wide distribution. That is why I'm not showing you any clips or photos. If you go to our website, cinemarecall.net, you can read my reviews on at least four of these movies. The fifth one I'm talking about here, I have not actually written a review about it, but I will this week, along with a few other features that I'm seeing. So very cool. I'm very grateful. I even got a cool little press badge here that has my actual name on there. And I am extremely, very, extremely grateful that I got to view and see this material here. So yes. So the first movie that I am going to talk about briefly on here is one called Working Class Goes to Hell. And I'm just going to read to you the synopsis of what it says here, okay? So, here we go. After losing their loved ones, jobs, and dignity to a tragic factory fire and privatization, a group of ex-workers seek hope and justice in the supernatural. Gloomy, violent, fierce, and funny, Working Class Goes to Hell is like nothing you've seen before. So this feature, which stars Tamara Kornuvak, Leon Lovick. Okay, I'm not going to be good at pronouncing these names here, folks. I apologize immensely about that. So this one here is directed by... I'm not pronouncing that name either because I am going to get flayed for being insensitive. But this feature is about, you know, these workers, they get laid off, and then they want to try to reach out to supernatural people, and dark forces come in to help get revenge. This would be good if it had the revenge angle to it. I wish this movie, I wanted there to be more of the workers' life before things go from bad to worse, because things do get dark, and I understand they got laid off, they have a severance package, but in this movie, it feels like a week has gone by, and already there are workers who are engaging in drug deals, one worker is considering prostitution, and I'm like, it's only been like a week, right? Did your money all run out that fast? There was no sense of time passing in this that I wanted there to be a little bit more. Like, I want there to be more of the characters' lives. I want to get more into what they are as people, because many of these workers are friends, and I wanted to see them help each other out. One of the workers gets a job at a bar. And it seems like in this movie, only, like I said before, a week passed, and already she has to, you know, go to prostitution, someone does drugs. And they do these seances to bring out the dead. And I guess they're using these seances to bring all these dead people back up from the grave to get revenge. And I'm expecting a full-blown, like, zombie invasion. And I don't get that at all. I don't get really any much demon possession in this. I get the message that this director is trying to say about how we should treat our workers with respect and dignity. Otherwise, bad shit's going to happen. But if this is going to be a supernatural demon zombie movie or whatnot, it needs to focus on that a little bit more. This movie has elements of the supernatural, but just not as much as I wanted there to be in this film called Working Class Goes to Hell. I was expecting, like, zombies and demons to, like, attack people and demons to possess these workers and demons to possess the assholes that fired them and all that shit. But didn't get that. Still, an alright movie. It's got a great mood to it. And I apologize immensely. If you go to our website, all the names are spelled correctly on there. And you are a lot better at pronouncing these names than I am. So I apologize immensely. I'm going to move on to our next feature, which is called Daydreamin'. And Daydreamin' is a Chinese production. And I'm going to look this up really quickly here, if I can find where it is. I'm looking at my booklet, and that's telling me everything that I want to know. So where's that? All right, there's DEA. Where's my Daydreamin'? Okay, Daydreamin'. Okay, here we go. Daydreamin' from this year, China. Let's see now. Zhu Tan is starting at a new school, and it's not going well. Saved by his imagination, this hopeful third grader is caught up in outlandish but relatable comedy of errors. Deb Gerwood wrote that, and I should also give credit to the person who wrote the thing for The Working Class Goes to Hell, and there's no name there. Okay, so here we go. Daydreamin'. It stars Yu Hao, Li Quandin, Ma Kualum. It says the director. It doesn't give me a director's name on here. But like I said before, find the information on our website, cinemarecall.net. So this movie is about a boy who's going to school, and he doesn't have much friends. And he uses his wild imagination to get out of doing schoolwork. So he always imagines that there are like these large birds that pickpocket stuff. And that's why his homework is lost. He says that a bird picked his pocket, and they do show this large bird flashback of bird picking his pocket. And when the teacher says, all right, you'll have a chance to retake your assignment. You just got to bring your paper home to have your parents sign it. He says that there's a large creature in the bathroom that likes to eat paper. And they do show a large creature eating paper. This is a very charming, cute movie. I love the practical effects. It reminds me very much of Guillermo del Toro and his creature effects. It also has like kind of element of like Jim Henson a little bit in there too, which I found to be very charming. But yeah, this little boy, day in his life, and he has a crush on this girl, and every time they show this little girl, he sees her as like this beautiful sunflower with like waves around her. But the girl that he has more in common with is a girl he sees as like this ragweed and whatnot, but her and him have a lot more in common than you would think they would have. So that's very cool. Trying to think right now, this is a very cool, colorful feature. A lot of great characters. He doesn't want to do schoolwork much, so he imagines his teacher fighting this alien robot in hopes that this alien creature will come down and take her away. And they have this really cool fight outside the walls and everything. This little boy is scared to have his parents come in for a parent-teacher conference. And the whole plot of the story is this little boy trying to get out of these chores, these elements, to have him be part of the parents-teacher conference or whatever you want to call it. So he devised, the teacher wants him to write a essay about, you know, his life and the lies he's told, and he meets a bunch of different other characters in this. It's a short feature, 90 minutes long. It's a very, very well done, very well crafted, very visually pleasing, crowd-pleasing movie that I enjoyed very much. Daydreamin', like I said before, go to our website. I do a much better job at writing stuff down, so go there, all right? I'm just stripped for parts, American journalism on the brinks. And it's all about news companies being bought out by hedge funds. And these hedge funds wants to buy out newspapers and control the elements that's going on there. And so this filmmaker here, if I can actually find, where did I put this here? I'm looking, okay. So Rick Goldsmith is the documentary filmmaker, and he's going to all the different news outlets and talking about how these hedge fund companies are buying out these newspapers and firing all of their best reporters, basically dwindling everything down to just a bare minimum. And it's all about how we really do need professional journalisms. Not journalism. We need professional journalists. So I think the message of the movie is extremely important, that it needs to be saved. I just wish there was a little bit more fight to it. I want there to be kind of like a Roger and Me type documentary. When Roger Moore heard about all the factory workers being laid off at GM, he went to try to contact Roger, the head president of GM Motors, to have them go, hey, here's what you're doing to these workers. Here's what's happening. And I kind of wanted more of that element, more of a rebellish angst. Not so much like a history of like hedge funds or even a history of newspaper. I wanted this filmmaker to kind of go after these guys a little bit more. And there was like one, I guess, scene where protesters are outside this company's headquarters, and they get stopped by the security guards, and then that's it. I want them to be like a little bit more, because if all these workers are being like laid off, and this whole thing is about the death of like newspaper journalism in a way, I guess I want them to do a little bit more with it. And I understand maybe it's budget. I mean, if they do get arrested, that's going to cost money to get them out of jail. So look, I get it. It's a small term foam production right there. But even the Roger and Me, that was a small money. That was a small budget movie. It got big when it got picked up by Warner Brothers and whatnot. And maybe the course of documentary filmmaking is not what it was before, and you can't really just do outlandish stuff where you do go after, I guess, a big hedge fund company. And so, yeah, but I think it's an important message to have. And I really hope this Rick Goldsmith does get like a bigger budget so he can go after these assholes a little bit more. So, yeah, that was Stripped for Parts. American Journalism on the Brinks. So, like I said before, check out that review on our website, cinemarecall.net. And I'll give you links on our website about where you can go to that person's homepage and, you know, go check out some of the stuff there. Very cool. Our next feature, and this is one of the best features I've seen so far. There's two more reviews left on here. But the next one is The Movie Teller. And I'm going to pull this up really quickly here as I look this up in my booklet. And I'm going to sing for you while I look this up here. Okay. So The Movie Teller is from Lorna Shifrick, a director, and the story is this. In the 1960s, in a drought-stricken mining town in the Chilean Atacama Desert, Maria's family can only afford one ticket to the movies. When she comes home, she performs the movie for them. Soon everyone wants to listen to Maria's incredible movies. This movie, The Movie Teller, stars, what I see here now, Bernice Bejo, Antonio de la Torre, Daniel Brühl, Sarah Becker. So Bernice Bejo, you'll recognize her. She was the lead actress in The Artist, if you remember that movie. And, of course, Daniel Brühl, you recognize in Inglourious Basterds. He was the Nazi assassin that everyone was praising in that movie. Sarah Becker plays our lead character. She is the one that is reciting all these movies to tell for her first family. and then everyone else in the village. And I enjoy this movie because all the movies that they show and reference, I've seen a lot of these. So when she goes to see the apartment, the movie with Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine, and she reenacts scenes from that, I'm like, yes, I have seen that before. I recognize that. When they're trying to find a movie teller for the family, and they have each of this Maria's brothers go to the movies, and one of Maria's brothers does a reenactment of the train sequence from The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, where both Catherine Deneuve and I forget the other guy's name, they're having that departure, that big, wonderful, beautiful departure when he's going off to war with the clouds and the rain and she's running away. He uses like model train cars and little cellophone for clouds. It's really cool. I really enjoy that very much. Yeah, and then later on, Maria does a reenactment of the good, the bad, and the ugly. And other movies too that I just can't think of off the top of my head right now. But very, very fun movie. Things start to go bad when, like in the movie, let me go back here. So the reason why they can only afford to send just one family member is because her dad is a worker. He gets injured. He can no longer work. So they can't afford to bring the whole family to the movies like they've done before. So they get Maria to do the telling of the movies. Things are going fine for the family. But the mother, played by Bernice Bourgeois, is, I guess she's getting frustrated that there's no money coming into the family. She's the one that starts up a friendship with, it looks like, I think Daniel Brühl plays someone higher up in the factory, and she strikes up a relationship with him. It's unclear exactly what that relationship is, but I'm going to assume that she's sleeping with him in order to get money for the family. And when that money runs out, she goes, all right, that's it. I'm out of here. I'm going to go hightail it out to another place and start my life off as a dancer, leaving basically Maria, Sarah Becker character, to take care of her whole family herself. And I gotta say, Sarah Becker, really good. Really, really good in this. She has a wide range. I want to see more movies with her. I thought she was absolutely incredible. And I gotta say, if you're a fan of older movies, you're gonna love this one very much. And maybe this movie, if you're not familiar with the movies that they're referencing, maybe this will get you to watch those movies. The only thing that gives us not quite the high rating as I want it to have is that there are political elements going on with that government and with it being overtaken by dictatorship that it feels like it's kind of shoehorned in a little bit. I wish that they put elements of that just a little bit earlier. And if they do, they don't make much reference of it because I'm only just seeing about this, what we call it here. Obviously, all I'm seeing right now is the, not so much deterioration because her dad was working and then his injury got him to not work. It isn't like the factory closed down and they're laying people off. No, he just got injured on a job and he can no longer work. So, and now the family has to just do other things besides doing the things that they love to do as a family, but they find a way to get together. So there's a moment near the end of this movie where she does, I'm not going to give too much spoiler here, but Maria does, you know, find her mother, and the way the scene after that felt like a great ending to that movie. And then when it adds in this political stuff, it would have been fine if that element was just sprinkled in just a little bit more. All right. I'm not saying it's not there, but it's just not there enough to warrant another 30 minutes because I'm like, oh, now I feel like I'm in a slightly different movie here, just slightly. If you want more of my details about this, like I said before, go to our website, cinemarecall.net, and I will give you my thoughts about that. All right, the last movie from the wonderful Minneapolis St. Paul International Film Festival that I saw, actually just saw this like just last night of recording this, and I actually do have to look this one up because I can't really pronounce this one without actually doing so. Okay, here we go. Humanist vampire seeking consentant suicidal person. This is directed by Arena Lewis Circe. And okay, I'm going to tell you the description of this. Sasha is a teenage vampire who just doesn't want to kill humans. When her aspirated parents cut off her blood supply, Sasha's life is in jeopardy. She meets Paul, a dour teenager who is eager to die to nourish his new friend. So yeah, this is actually really a very fun, very sweet movie. It reminds me so much of A Girl Who Watched Home Alone at Night, mixed in with Let the Right One In. I find, and I wish I, what are the characters here? Where am I on here? Okay. So Sarah Montepetta, Felix, Antoine Bernard, Steve LePet. I imagine that Sarah Montepetta is the Sasha character. And I thought she was great. Reminds me very much of a young Winona Ryder in Beetlejuice. But yeah, vampire family. The little daughter just hates drinking blood. Hates what does not want to kill a single human being at all. She gets very traumatized by it. She meets our dour character, Paul, who is very depressed, doesn't want to live anymore. And they strike up a friendship because, you know, he wants to die. She needs to drink blood. So they form this friendship alliance. And she wants him to make one last wish before she will drain his blood. And he wants to go after all the people that tormented him. And they do that. And things happen. It's a very, very kind of a sweet, dark, funny movie. I find all the cast to be really great. This is from Draft House Films, who also has made other great features. I think they did the FP. I think they released Miami Connection, if I'm not mistaken. I know they've done other re-release movies. I don't know for sure, but this may be one of the other first features that they released as well. Yeah, this was great. I will have a full review on our website, so check that out as well. All right, folks. Yeah, that's it right now. I'm sorry. I'm not doing any edits of this at all. I just come on here just completely raw, and hope you enjoyed me talking about some of these movies from the Minneapolis St. Paul International Film Festival. Because I said I would give you a quick little bonus episode giving you all these reviews that I have now here. So thank you very much, everyone, for watching and for listening or whatever you're doing on there. So thank you. All right. Don't forget to check out our website, cinemarecall.net. We have a Patreon page, patreon.com/cinemarecallpod. You can get episodes early before anyone else does. At the time of this recording, we have our Howard the Duck episode with Kaylee from Once Over with Kaylee. So that's on our Patreon page right now. It releases Friday, April 26th on the podcast platforms. Video version of that will come out a little bit later. So yeah, that's it right now. Join our Crackhead groups, Crack, on our Facebook page, Crack. Cinema Recall's awesome cinematic club. Wow. All right. So that's it. I have nothing more to say right now. Big shout out to everyone at the Main Cinema and the Minneapolis Film Society. Very grateful and thankful to get press patches. I've got more movies to watch this next week, which I will share for you on our next recap episode or everything. So that's it. Love you all. I've got nothing more to say right now. I feel like I should say something. And I know as soon as I hit stop, I'm going to forget something that I should mention on here. And but if you follow us on the social medias, on Twitter, we are at @cinema_recall. Instagram, believe the same thing too, @cinema_recall. Just type in Cinema Recall on your search web engines and it pulls up everything. Pulls up our YouTube and our Instagram and our Facebook and all the places you can listen to us there. So very cool. But yeah, if you want to interact with us, do that so on Twitter or on Instagram. Anyways, folks, I love you all very much. I know, damn it, I know I've written something, but that's what I do. Yeah, so love you all. Take care, and I will talk to you later, all right? Bye-bye, everybody.